UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
Was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs? They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. I'm Nick Hunter and you're listening to the UFO Chronicles podcast. We are back in the Bluegrass State this episode with tonight's guest, Geraldine Sutton Stiff, to share a close encounter her family had at their farm in Kelly, Kentucky in 1955. And our witness submission is from Jazz Shaw with a Bigfoot encounter in the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York.
If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hey, Nick. You and I discussed having me call in before. This is Jazz Shaw, and I decided to finally call in and share my story because other people have weighed in on similar topics. So, without further ado, I'll just get into it. I do not have a UFO sighting or any of the other paranormal things you have talked about, but I do have one cryptid sighting. When I was 14 years old in 1974, in upstate New York in the Adirondack Mountains, I did see a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, whatever you want to call it. My story, as I've told you before, I find it one of the more boring stories because so many other people have, you know, sightings of cryptids that include a lot of really exciting stuff. Mine wasn't one of those. My family and I were up at a camp that my father owned in the Adirondacks. I will send you a Google Maps link to where it is. It's a pretty remote area where there's one road running through a section of the mountain. And to the north of that, there's a river that leads into a large reservoir. And beyond that, it's just forest for a long ways until you get up near the Canadian border. It was June of 1974. I know that because that's when the bullhead were running, and we were up there, and my older brother and sister were out with my father doing something else. My mother and I were back at the camp by ourselves, and the camp backed up to a large downhill slope that went down to the section of the wide section of river that was abutted by our property. And I had gone down there just to play. I mean, as a 14-year-old kid, you know, just out doing things. And I had thought I was going to be going fishing, so I grabbed a pole and I went down there. And when I got down to the edge of the trees and was looking out to where I was going to be going, I saw a large black furry figure on the opposite side of the water about 50 yards away, which I initially thought was a bear. And that's not uncommon because black bear are very common up there. And they aren't really huge, but this was huge, but it could have been a bear. But I stopped and I was watching, and the closer I looked, I saw that it was a creature that really did not look at all like a bear. And it was on the opposite side of the water. It was crouched down on all fours in a swampy area of marsh grass and whatnot on the other side of the river. And I was staring at it, and I didn't understand what I was seeing. But after that, only a few minutes. No, it's not even a few minutes. I would say maybe 15 seconds or so. It stood up, and it stood up on two legs, and I have seen bears stand up on two legs. This was not a bear. It was very tall. I have no idea exactly how tall, but it was taller than any of the people I was used to seeing. And it definitely had human-like hands I could see on one side. And it didn't look at me. I don't know why. It didn't see me. But I did notice that it had a not human, but a sort of ape-like face without hair on it, but the rest of the body was covered in hair. And it looked briefly around, walked a few steps, and then crouched back down and was going back, whatever it was doing, rooting around in the water. I became very frightened because I had no idea what I was seeing. I turned around and ran back up through the woods and up the hill up to my mother and tried to tell her about it. And she told me to stop lying, and if I kept making up stories, I would get a paddling. I didn't describe it to her as a Bigfoot because I'd never heard of one at that time. In the time and area where I grew up, I'd never heard of anything like that. I told her I'd seen a giant monkey. But as I said, she told me to go back out and play. And I went ahead and I crept back down there, and when I got there, it was gone. So that was the entire encounter. That's why I say I have a very boring encounter. The creature definitely had a somewhere between human and perhaps apish or monkeyish face, and the rest of it was mostly covered with hair. I had never heard of a Bigfoot, as I said. In later years, when I finally saw the Patterson-Gimlin film, I looked at that and I was like, wow, that's what I saw, except it wasn't a female because I didn't notice any apparent breasts or anything. But it was certainly a Sasquatch. And of course, you question your memories later in life, but it stuck with me all these years. And nothing exciting happened. There was no howling. There was no wood knocking. There was no stone throwing. It was just this thing that I saw. So why didn't I get absorbed into that? Why didn't I fall down the rabbit hole? Because you see a lot of weird things in the woods, Nick. And I think at my age, I just absorbed that into my head. Like, well, when you're out in the mountains, sometimes you see weird things. You see porcupines, you see bears, you see deer. Well, maybe sometimes you see a giant monkey. You know, and it was only as an adult that I found out, it was like, oh, that's what I saw, you know. But that's my story. I never saw another one ever again. And to this day, I'm firmly convinced that's what happened. I've become far more interested in other things, particularly, you know, UFO phenomena and whatnot. But I have no doubt that Bigfoot is real. So I wanted to share that story with everybody because sometimes when you're out in the woods, particularly in North America, up near the Canadian border, in really remote areas, you see some weird stuff, and I think sometimes you see a Bigfoot. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you for that, Jazz. A far from boring sighting. In fact, you should consider yourself very fortunate to have had a sighting. And if you would like to get in contact with me, my email address is ufochronicles@gmail.com or on the website ufochroniclespodcast.com, and you can connect with me via the contact page. Geraldine.
Well, thank you, Nick. Thank you for having me on here.
It is great having you on today. Now, Geraldine, you're going to be sharing an encounter that happened to your family in Kelly, Kentucky, back in 1955.
Yes, August the 21st, 1955.
Still clear in your mind?
Oh, yes. I've told the story so many times that I could tell it in my sleep.
And it's such a famous story as well. Would you like to start from the beginning for us, please, Geraldine?
Oh, I sure will. Well, like I always like to say, I believe this is the great American horror story because you've got 11 people in the middle of nowhere in little bitty Kelly, Kentucky in 1955. You got to think, 1955, it was very sparse as far as people are concerned. Farmland. It was my grandmother's farm. She had a little, it was small, just a few acres, almost 30. She didn't have much on there, but it was hers. She was a widow. And at the time, she had three small children, which were 12, 10, and 7. And it was Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary. And also at the time, my Uncle J.C. and my Aunt Eileen stayed with her and helped her on the farm. And every once in a while, Eileen's brother, O.P. Baker, would come and spend the nights with them. Well, it just so happened, the weekend of this occurrence, my dad and his wife at the time, Vera, and Billy Ray Taylor and his wife, June, all worked together in a carnival. So they had been traveling all over the place. And just so happened that weekend, they were in Evansville, which is like 2 hours away from Kelly. They were so close, they decided to come in for the weekend, get some good home cooking, which they hadn't had in a while, and, you know, just visit the family. So they headed on in. They had a nice little couple of days. And then Sunday evening came. And that's when the craziness started. It was their last evening, and so they were trying to enjoy it because they knew they had to go back to work the next day. And it was hot, hot, dry August. They had electricity, but they did not have indoor plumbing. So to get water, you had to go to the well. Well, Billy Ray decided to walk out to the well and get some cold water. As he's out there, he hears something, looks up to where this noise is coming from, and lo and behold, going across the sky is a silver, oval-looking shaped object with what he called the colors of the rainbow streaming behind it. Well, he didn't know what it was. None of us would. It scared him. He ran in the house, slammed the door behind him. Everybody looks at him like he's crazy. He tells them, he says, there's something out here. Well, the first thought that popped in their mind, and especially my grandmother's mind, was he went out there trying to think of some kind of crazy story to scare the girls because they were all young people, early 20s. Billy Ray's wife was 18 or 19 at the time. And so they just laughed at him, told him just to go on. Well, he kept on. My dad finally told him, you know, Billy Ray, well, take me out here to the well. Let's see. Let's just take a look. They walk out there. Points up to the sky, tells my dad again what he had seen. And my dad tells him, well, let's think about this. It could have been a shooting star. And Billy Ray is like, no, I know what those look like. Well, maybe a meteor shower, because they had been having meteor showers that month. And Billy Ray said, no, I know what that looks like. And so my dad tells him, well, there's nothing out here now. I don't see anything. Let's just go back to the house, enjoy the rest of the evening, and forget it. As they're walking to the house, lo and behold, from the back where the woods were, comes this little three and a half foot tall being. He had huge ears, big glowing eyes, arms almost touching the ground, and he seemed to float on top of the ground. His legs were not moving. Of course, they didn't know what this was. We wouldn't either if we were there. They go running in the house, slam the door behind them, and start trying to tell everybody, yes, there is something out here. Well, of course, first thing my grandmother is thinking, all right, Billy Ray done got Lucky, or Elmer, my dad, out there to go along with his little skiing, trying to scare the girls. And they kept on, and my grandmother said, you know, you need to stop. I've got to get these kids to bed, and you're not helping any. And he told her, he said, well, Mom, he said, there's something out here. There really, really is. She knew it was really getting serious when one grabbed the rifle, one grabbed the shotgun, one went to the front door, and one went to the back. Well, my grandmother was thinking, okay, let's get to the bottom of this. So she decides to go to the back where Billy Ray was. And she gets back there, sits down beside him, says, Billy Ray, what did you see? He looked at her. He says, Miss Glennie? He says, I don't know what that was, but he says, I hope it's something that you never see. Well, it was quiet, and they could hear people, you know, everybody talking in the house. And lo and behold, around the corner where they were sitting comes this little being. My grandmother sees it. She screams. She falls to the floor. Everybody comes running. They help her up, and she tells them, there is something out here. I just saw it. And she's trying to explain. About that time, a shot rings out in the front of the house. It's my Uncle JC. He shoots one through the window. Well, they come a-running, and Billy Ray runs out the door, and right there under the front door is a little stoop. And there's this clawed hand that comes down and tries to grab his hair. The Aunt Eileen grabs him and pulls him back in the house. And as she does that, my dad runs out the door, points up toward where it was, and shoots it. It's sitting right there. When he shoots it, he can hear it. It pings like a bucket sound, like a tin. It drops. It rolls. It floats away. Someone screams. There's one out in the tree. They had these huge, I think they were maple trees out in the front yard. There was one sitting on a branch. She turns, shoots. It floats to the ground. Rolls and just floats away. By the time it's all said and done, they've shot one off the back fence. They keep shooting them away from the house. They don't know what they are. They do know the bullets are not having any kind of effect on them. They keep coming back. Well, they're scared. They don't know what these things are. Why are they trying to get in the house? That's what they're seeming to want to do anyway. And the kids are crying. The girls are crying, and they don't know what to do. My dad tells them, says, just calm down. We'll figure this out. We'll go get help. We'll get in the trucks. We'll go to Hopkinsville, and we'll get help. So he gets everybody down, and they're quiet. And about that time, of course, they had an old metal roof. They hear one going on top of the metal roof. These little nails just going across it. Well, this really gets everybody into hysterics. June's about to lose it. They don't know what to do. And my dad tries to calm them down once again. And he tells them, it's going to be okay. We're going to get to Hopkinsville. So just hold on. Calms them down again. It gets quiet. There's nothing. They can't hear anything. So he tells them, he says, let's go. So they go, jump in the trucks, and head to Hopkinsville. Hopkinsville's about 7 miles from Kelly. They get to the sheriff's office, run in, one little officer on duty, because it's 55, they didn't need a whole crew back then. You've got 11 people from the age of 7 to 50 running in the middle of the night, begging for help, and they're trying to explain to him what was happening. They were all talking, he couldn't understand it, he says, there's little men attacking your farm. And my dad told him, says, you're not understanding what we're trying to tell you. So he tells him, he says, just hold on. So he calls Chief Russell Greenwell. Greenwell tells him, says, just keep them there. Call Fort Campbell, which Fort Campbell Army Base was just down the road. He says, call the newspaper. You know, just get as many people as you can out there and let's see what we can do. So by the time it's all said and done, you got this caravan of vehicles going back out to little bitty Kelly in the middle of the night. Okay, it's dark. They don't have street lights or anything. It's really, really ominous. I mean, just eerie. They pull up. They all notice that, you know, it does seem weird. It feels strange. Some of the officers in one of the cars did notice that there was a glowing substance on the back fence where they had shot that one. But they went up to it, and when they'd go up to it, the glow would go away. But they did notice when they backed away from it, it would glow again. Didn't understand it, just let it go. They searched the house. They searched any buildings that were around there. They couldn't find anything. Clear evidence something happened. You know, shotgun and rifle shells all over the ground outside, all over the inside of the house. Woodwork, screens, holes in them, shot up. You know, what happened here? There was no blood. There was no bodies. No body parts. No fur, skin, or feathers, anything to show they had shot something. Which, in their mind, the chief's mind, if they had hit anything, which they would have hit it because these were country boys. You know, they learned to shoot by the time they could walk just about. So he knew if they'd hit something, there'd be evidence of it. He told my grandmother, he said, Miss Glennie, I'm so sorry, but there's nothing here. We can't do anything to help you tonight. So they all left the family there, still scared to death. My grandmother finally got the kids settled down, got them in bed. She went to her bed and laid down. My dad sat beside her in the rocking chair, shotgun across his lap. They were all physically and mentally exhausted. She was laying there. She opened her eyes and looked toward the window, and lo and behold, there he was again. And she thought, I'm just tired. She closed her eyes again, opened them up. Well, still standing there. Third time she did it, she said, Elmer, they're back. He jumps up, and the fight begins again, and they keep this up until daylight hits. Close to running out of ammo, they were trying to make it last as long as possible. The only thing they could think that saved them was the sun, because they did notice that when they turned a light on or shined a light toward them in any way, they would back down. The only thing they could figure was their big eyes couldn't stand the light. So they were gone. My dad set the family down. He told them, no good can come of this story. He says, I heard them last night. They were laughing at us. They didn't believe us. So he said, just keep it to yourself. Don't say anything more about this. So the family went on about their business that day. In fact, some of the men went to Evansville, from what I heard, to go pick up some furniture or something. But while they were gone, the women got interrogated. People were coming up asking questions, wanting to know what was going on, what happened. By the time it was all said and done, you had people camping out in the yard at night because they wanted to see the aliens. They wanted to meet the little beings. They were walking through the house and taking souvenirs, taking stuff out of the yard. My grandmother didn't know what to do about this. Of course, she was scared. She knew my dad, Billy Ray, and the girls were going to have to go back to work. They couldn't stay there. And her, with just JC and Eileen, she didn't know if they could make it with the three kids. So she sold the farm within 2 weeks and moved into Hopkinsville into an apartment complex. So did JC and Eileen. And sold the farm, got away from it. She was scared. She didn't know if they would be back. They don't know what they were there for in the first place. You know, why were they there? Why were they coming up to the door? If they didn't get what they want, would they be back? And that was something that stayed in their mind. And she wasn't going to test it. So she got rid of the farm. That was the night. I mean, August the 21st, 1955. The night my family went through a terrible, terrible occurrence. But, you know, hey, today you wouldn't think that, because good has come of the story, that back then, it was scary. Like I say, I call it the Great American Horror Story. That family went through something at night, and that's something I try to tell people, whether it be extraterrestrial or paranormal or whatever these things were, they were visited by something that night. And that's my story.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
You know, knowing how people get ridiculed for coming out these days, I can't imagine what it would have been like back in 1955.
Well, yeah, you know, the movies were just coming out. You know, the UFO movies and that type of thing were just coming out in the 50s. People didn't know about that. And especially this family, because they were a poor farming family. They didn't get to go to the movies all the time and all, you know, that type of thing. They had no clue. You know, especially my grandmother and the kids, they had no clue. Now, you know, my dad, Billy Ray, and them may have known more about it because they traveled. But they didn't know what these things were. Nobody knows to this day what those things were. We'll never know what those things were.
And was it always talked about in your family?
No, no. This was something that was kept quiet. Nobody talked about it. In fact, it was kept a secret from us kids for a long, long time. The way we learned about it was crazy. I can tell you about that. I was like maybe 8 years old, and it was a Sunday afternoon. I'll never forget it. It was summertime. And we were sitting in the living room, me and some of my younger siblings, watching cartoons on TV. And this man and woman come knocking at the door, and they were dressed really nice, like they just come from church. You know, that's how it was in my small mind at the time. And it was asking to talk to my dad, and my mom and dad were in the back of the house. And so I ran back there and told them that somebody's here to talk to you. They got to the door, and they introduced themselves, and they told my dad, says, "We're here to talk about the Green Men." Well, you know what? That's kind of like, whoa, Green Men, what's all this about? Because even back then, as young as I was, I loved horror. I loved science fiction. And so when they said that, I was like, oh, boy, what do we got here? So anyway, I guess they thought, well, I guess they need to learn about this. So they set us in a circle on the floor, and my mom and dad and two visitors sat down. And my dad started telling this incredible story. By the time he was done, I was scared to death. You know, it's different seeing a movie or a TV show. But when you've got somebody sitting there in front of you telling them about something that really happened in their life, you know, especially somebody as close as your father, it puts fear in you. So from that night forward, I would go around the house and shut every curtain, shade, door, whatever's on the windows, and close them up because I was afraid these little things were coming back. And they were going to look in at us and try to get in like they did them. So, you know, but yeah, they kept this from us. And it was never talked about. I mean, we heard it that day, and you were very, very lucky if you got him to talk about it at all. Because you could tell when he talked, it scared him to death. I always tell people, my dad was a little man, but he'd fight a bear for what he believed in. And this thing here scared him. This event that took place in 1955 scared him. And it affected the whole family that was involved. You know, what do you do? But he took us the following weekend. He took us to Kelly to show us where it all happened at. I guess since, you know, the cat was out of the bag, you know, he was wanting us to see the whole thing since we knew the story now. So he took us to Kelly. The old house was still standing. The well is still there to this day. He took us to the back field way in the back and showed us this huge bare spot on the ground that was still there in whatever year that was, 68, 69, when they came around. So I actually seen the bare spot, and it was huge. And I'll never forget that.
It'd be a shame that the local sheriff didn't take a sample of that a glowing liquid that was, you know, on the back fence.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was, you know, if you think about it now, it was one of the things they should have done. They should have taken the proper protocol and taken samples, taken dirt samples, taken, you know, these bullets that were hitting them. You know, if they were still there, you know, on the ground or whatever, why didn't they take some of those? You know, samples of anything. You know, they didn't rope off the area at all. So, of course, it was contaminated from the very beginning, especially when the people started coming the following day, you know, walking all over the place and taking stuff. So, you know, it was doomed from the very beginning as far as evidence and trying to figure out what happened.
Such a fascinating story this is, and such a famous one as well.
Yes, people love this little story. And, you know, I think it's because of the innocence part of it. You got an innocent family, didn't have a clue what these things were, you know. Well, none of us would, but today, with everything we know now, we would have more of an insight of what they would have been than they would have back then. You know, they were called goblins to begin with because they didn't know what they were. My grandmother thought it was something that the devil had brought forth because she was really religious. So that was in her mind. Maybe that's what they were. Who knows? We'll never know.
It'd be really interested in knowing what they wanted. Maybe they just wanted some good old home-cooked Kentucky food.
Well, we don't know. You know, I have had ufologists tell me that maybe it was the kids. Because later on, after the fact, people came forward and were talking about seeing lights and things during the day that day. And you know, what if they did see the kids out playing or whatever? And then being small, maybe they thought, you know, hey, they're our size. Maybe we can play, or maybe we can get one or two of them. You know, we don't know. But that's one of the thoughts, was maybe it was the kids that drew their attention. But if that's the case, you know, they weren't the only kids around. You know, there was all kinds of farming families. You know, Hopkinsville is up the road. It was a city. I'm sure there were all kinds. It was summertime. I'm sure there was kids playing everywhere that day, you know. So I don't know. That's just a theory. Just a theory. Nobody knows for sure. We'll never know.
But you pull this down in a couple of books, I believe, Geraldine.
Yes. I wrote the first one after we had, well, the reason I wrote it is because back in 2005, it was the 50th anniversary of the event, and Hopkinsville actually had a big four-day convention, which they asked me to participate in, which I was really like, okay, I've never done anything like that, but okay. And in participating in this, I found out that people did not know this story. You know, they'd have my dad's name wrong. They would say, like, Billy Ray got abducted. The aliens were, like, 11 or 12 or 13 of them. And my dad was adamant about that. He truly believed there was maybe three or four, and that's it. They just kept getting up and coming back, the same three or four. And, you know, just different little things like that. You know, I thought, my gosh, people really don't know this story. So that's why I wrote that first book. And then after I wrote the first book, people were coming forward and telling me things that people did not know. I thought, okay, time for a second one. So I wrote the second one to add things I had learned since the first one. You know, that's what you do when you do something like that. Let people find out about things and hope everything turns out okay with it. But so far, so good. So we'll see.
Where can we get a copy of your book, Geraldine?
You can get them on my website, which is alienlegacy1955.com. I also have an Etsy shop, which you can go on Etsy and just type in aliens and goblins. My shop will come up and I have them there along with some other neat little things. And that's the two places, of course, Amazon and, you know, stuff like that, you can get them. But
links are in the description. I personally went to the Etsy shop. I like the little goblins, yeah.
Aren't they good? My brother makes those.
I'll put all the links down in the description so people can get hold of them. Great stuff.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You know, I heard someone saying that it could have been owls.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, they were country boys. You know, yes. they knew they knew what an owl was.
Well, that, and you know, it was also said cats, it is monkeys, and these boys could shoot a rabbit running a squirrel out of a tree. They definitely could hit something that was 3 foot tall. So, you know, if it was a monkey, a cat, or an owl, there'd been dead ones laying out there in the yard, definitely. As much shooting as was going on. I mean, there was so much shooting going on, the neighbors were hearing it. But nobody was coming to aid because they were afraid to, because they were shooting. You know, you just don't step out in the dark, you know, pitch black dark in the night when somebody's out there shooting. You're going to get shot yourself. So, I mean, even one of the neighbors was getting his flashlight and his boots and stuff on and was going to go try to help him because they thought maybe some of the animals had gotten out. But once the shooting, you know, he got to thinking twice about that and thought, no, I better not. Because there was so much shooting going on. You know, that was the scary part about it. But yeah, anything got shot that night, it'd been laying in the yard or the woods or somewhere, blood somewhere.
The place must have looked like Swiss cheese.
Well, it didn't look like Swiss cheese, but it had places that were shot up on it. Holes in the screen, some of the woodwork was shot at. Because they were shooting toward the windows and doors, you know, in, through the screens.
How far away from the house was the circle, like it looks like a landing?
It was, I would say, probably half to three quarters of the length of a football field from the house. I wouldn't say a whole football field. Well, yeah, it may have been. It's pretty far back in there because when we went back there a few weeks ago, that's a pretty good walk from the house to it.
Pretty close by. And you say the house is still there?
No, the house is gone. It was tore down a long time ago. And, you know, people live there now, built a new house there. They've been there quite a while, though. It's not a new house now, but the farm has been cut up into, like, I don't know, four or five different sections, and different people live in each section. In fact, my younger sister and her husband bought 5 acres of it here a few months ago, and they just now got their place in there, and they're living there back in there now.
Oh, it's great to keep about in the family then.
Yeah, at least a section of it is, yes.
Yeah. I bet it was great going back, actually, after all those years.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I mean, eerie, a little crazy. Because, you know, hey, you don't know. I've had a UFO, there's no ufology thing here, tell me that because we're all connected to family that this has happened to, that we could be visited. Well, I don't want to be visited. I hope they never visit me, really. But, you know, it's a scary thought. And that's just, you know.
Yeah, it's a possibility. Your family's encounter is very different than probably what I perceive to be like an abduction scenario.
Well, a chance to do any abduction. I got shot at. Poor little critters.
Wrong family.
Yeah, they chose the wrong family. You're right. Exactly. They well, you know, just think about it. This is 1955. Everybody back then had guns. I mean, they had rifles and shotguns. They hunted. So any family they had chose that night, they'd probably gotten the same reception. You know what I'm saying? So it wouldn't have done them any good. They just chose the wrong part of the county. That's what it was. They should have went to town, got some of those city folks as well. Maybe they learned something that night.
Property and boundaries, that's what they learned.
Yes, maybe they learned something that night. They figured it out.
It's such a fascinating story. I really appreciate you coming on today, Geraldine, and sharing that with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you letting me talk about it. Okay, you have a good one.
That is all for tonight. I will be back next week with another witness encounter. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.